This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 7 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. We're finally here, guys. We've made it. We're just days away from the start of the NFL draft. We no longer have to hear reports about how teams feel about players just to manipulate the league and try to get what they want. We don't have to listen to take after take after take after take about this guy's off the field issues or how this other guy might not be a hard enough worker to make it at the NFL level. We've made it. Unfortunately, while I'm excited about the draft, pumped about the draft, this time of year brings one of my least favorite things in the world back to the limelight. Best player available. At this point, when you hear the phrase best player available, you probably don't even flinch. The phrase in and of itself makes sense. Teams, rather than drafting on, say, team need, are just drafting the best player available. The Rams in 2015, under the direction of the one and the only Jeffrey Fisher, took this approach. They took the best player available in the first round. They took Todd Gurley with the 10th overall pick in the draft, despite coming off a 6-10 season with holes all over the roster and already having Trey Mason and Zach Stacy on that roster. Instead of fixing true, obvious holes on the team, they wanted a game-changing running back with their 10th overall pick. They wanted Todd Gurley. They wanted the best player available. But here's the thing about the idea of best player available. It's actually not a thing, because it's impossible for it to be a thing the way that front offices and analysts want it to be a thing. Take the word best, for example. The word best means of the most excellent, effective, or desirable type or quality. We know this. We know what the word best means. We all went to elementary school, hopefully. But tell me, how is most excellent, effective, or desirable being defined uniformly across the NFL? The answer is that there is no defined way to determine best. There's no way to say this guy is the best, at least across NFL teams. I think the best movie of all time is The Usual Suspects, and you think it's Avatar. I think the best character in Mario Kart is Toad. I know that. And you think it's Bowser. I think the best hangover food comes from Bojangles, and you think it's McDonald's. Best is subjective. All this is to say that each team will have a different best player, meaning even if choosing what they see as the best player, that doesn't mean at all that they're choosing the actual best player. But I want to dig into this even deeper. How are individual teams, so we know there's not a one way to look at best player available across teams. But how are individual teams determining best? By grades, you might say. This guy has the best grade. He has a 95 out of 100. He is the best player in this draft. I don't know how they actually scale this. But player grades are naturally biased because human beings are making those grades. Like, think back to college. You're in a history class, you're in a business class, whatever. And instead of taking a test with a Scantron where you have an A, B, C, D answer, and then the professor can just throw that Scantron into a machine and it'll spit back the grades. Think back to when you did essay tests. Think back to when you had a prompt and you had to answer those stupid questions. Sometimes the professor gave them to you, sometimes they didn't, and when they didn't, it was awful. But think back to that. The person grading those essays, it's nearly impossible to grade those essays consistently because we're only human. The professor could have graded one of those essays at 7 p.m., gotten an argument with his wife at 8 p.m., spilled wine on the carpet at 9 p.m., and then he's grading yours at 10 p.m. and he hates life. You think your grade is going to be impacted? Of course, because he's a human being. He or she, whoever your professor is, they're a human being. You better hope and pray your professor was in a good mood when grading your test. And here's the thing about going off of grades and selecting the best player available in a draft. It should hypothetically be position agnostic, meaning a grade shouldn't be different simply because a player plays a certain position. Well, if that's the case, then why aren't we seeing kickers drafted in the top 5 of drafts? Why don't we ever see them consistently in the first round? Why don't we see them consistently in the first 3 rounds, ignoring the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Why aren't game-changing kickers being elevated in the draft? Think about it. If they're truly taking the best player available and you're ignoring the position that they're playing, then why aren't kickers being drafted? You mean to tell me that there's not a single kicker that has been a better prospect than a, say, 30th overall cornerback, 30th overall guard. There hasn't been a kicker that has been graded out as strongly as some of those players. What I'm basically saying is that best player available isn't truly about best player available. It's about the best player that loosely fits a need on a team. And there are two ways that you can kind of look at team need. It's not that straightforward. Team need can come in the form of, man, we really need this position. Like, I don't know, this season, maybe the Titans with wide receiver. That's a team need. But team need can also come down to high leverage, important positions. That's what we're seeing out with the Browns. The Browns need a quarterback. Quarterback is of the utmost importance for the Browns franchise and that team. But what are they probably going to do with the first overall pick? They're probably going to get Myles Garrett. They're probably going to get an edge rusher. Sure, it's a need of some sort. It's not their biggest need. And you would think with the first overall pick, they would want to go for the biggest need. So it's not all just about the biggest need. It's about drafting the biggest need or a position of massive importance in the NFL. I mentioned this before, but how do you win in today's NFL? You throw the ball well and you stop the pass well. How do you do those things? You have a good quarterback and a good wide receiver or a group of wide receivers. You have a good edge rush and good corner play. That's it. There's a lot more to it. I'm not going to say that offensive line doesn't matter. It matters. I'm not going to say that linebackers don't matter. They matter. You need good nose tackles. But at the highest level, that's how you win in today's league. So let's go back to that Todd Gurley example then. You might be thinking, well, the Rams clearly only picked the best player available when they selected Todd Gurley because they're picking a running back when they didn't exactly need a running back. Maybe you felt that way at the time, but in hindsight, you can see exactly why they picked Todd Gurley. Both the running backs they had on their roster are hashtag bad, can't keep jobs. And we're also talking about a Jeff Fisher-led team. Jeff Fisher-led teams dream of winning games 13-10. They dream of controlling the clock and kicking a field goal at the end of the game to win. That is a Jeff Fisher-led team. So while the consensus NFL doesn't see that position as a team need for that team, Jeff Fisher loves running, but Jeff Fisher thinks running backs are way more important than they actually are. Meaning, it might have not have been a top team need, but the position was important for that specific team. It's impossible to draft best player available without considering positional value. It's impossible. And if you don't consider positional value, you're just being arrogant. You're saying, my evaluation is so good and flawless that I can ignore what's important at the NFL level and draft whoever the hell I want to draft, because that's how good I am. Meanwhile, we know the NFL draft is far from a sure thing. The NFL draft is not a lock for any one prospect. You know, maybe I'm just taking this way too far and I'm ranting about something that's nothing. Though I would say that that's the case for literally anything football related, because like I've said before, this isn't serious stuff. This is just entertainment. But the bottom line here is that it's almost impossible for a team to actually approach the draft in a best player available manner. There's inherently always going to be some sort of need, whether it's a hole to fill on a roster or a position that's always needed or in high demand on an NFL roster. But I'll be honest, where my brain starts to melt is when people take this best player available approach and translate it to fantasy football. Now, to be clear, I'm not the first person to rant about this idea when it comes to fantasy, even the NFL draft. I'm certainly not the first, but last summer, Fantasy Douche from RotoViz wrote an article called Best Player Available is a Sham and You Should Beware Those Who Peddle It, which is both hilarious and accurate. In it, Fantasy Douche explains a concept that's similar to what I'm talking about why teams don't just go out and draft kickers in the first round. He says, I have filled this post with faux outrage and anger that I really don't mean. The fantasy industry is full of smart and nice people who work hard to give advice to strangers. But inherent to my understanding of zero RB is the idea that it's possible to exploit competitors who overvalue running backs. It's a positional value thing. If people want to say that running backs are due for a rebound, that's totally fine. It might happen, and I won't argue it couldn't happen. But it's also not really best player available either. In fact, best player available has to have some sense of positional value underlying it in order to not make it totally worthless. And then in parentheses, he says, we have to have some reason not to start the draft going defense, kicker, or quarterback. Exactly! This is exactly it. Just like in the real NFL draft, how there needs to be some sort of positional value factored into a best player available equation, the same has to be said in fantasy football. If not, how in the world do you know who the best player available is in a fantasy football draft? And the thing is with fantasy football, it's much more exact than real football. We're working within much stricter parameters with fewer positions, and there's an actual way to show how good or bad a player is, and that's fantasy points scored, right? There's one thing that we have to try to project, one thing, fantasy points scored. That's it. That's the only thing we care about. In the real NFL, there are so many different aspects on a field where a player can win, where a player can be really good at. There are one-trick ponies in the NFL that still work in the NFL because that one trick is very important at the NFL level. Some quarterbacks, for instance, can't throw a deep ball, but if they're in a West Coast-style offense, it doesn't matter as much. They can mask it. Some wide receivers can't get down the field. Maybe you're Anquan Boldin. You run like a dad now. You're Anquan Boldin. You think he's running 9 routes? No, he's not. That's not his game. That dude uses his body and dominates corners that way. But he's still in the league. He's still doing things. He did things last year. Because there are more aspects to an NFL player's game than simply fantasy points scored. Whereas in fantasy football, it is all about how many points you score. So I'm sure you've been in a draft before where your buddy Dave is like, yo man, I don't need a draft plan because I'm just going to take the best player available when it's my turn to pick. And you're like, okay, Dave, cool, man. But by saying that he doesn't need a draft plan, he's telling you that draft strategies aren't needed because you can just take the best player available. That's what he's saying. But as Fantasy Douche noted in his article, and as I've been talking about for the last 10 minutes, that in and of itself is a strategy because you're having to compare players within a position and across positions to get true best player available. By saying I'm taking the best player available, that is inherently a strategy. And a strategy in fantasy football and real football, you have to consider positional value in some way, shape, or form. I wrote a book called The Late Round Quarterback, which is kind of what got me started in this fantasy industry and down this career path. When I wrote that book, drafting quarterbacks late wasn't an accepted thing to do in fantasy. The year that I published it, which was 2012, 5 quarterbacks had average draft positions in the first 2 rounds of redraft leagues. Matthew Stafford was a 2nd round pick that year. But drafting quarterbacks late is a draft strategy that's timeless because fantasy football starts just one quarterback, so the supply of the position far outweighs the demand of the position. That's the crux of the argument, and there are tons and tons of numbers to back it up, and there's more to it. But if there's one thing to ever take away as to why you draft quarterbacks late, it's that. So if you went with a best player available strategy, how would you handle the quarterback position? Let's say you did some sort of VORP formula, some value over replacement player formula. Okay, you're already doing positional analysis, but let's pretend that this isn't positional analysis. And it showed you that a quarterback was the best selection in round 3. Would you select him there and then get another one in round 4 because it said the same thing? And then another one in round 5 because VORP told you that again? Or maybe, just maybe, best player available in fantasy football is just a way of saying, I haven't actually done the full work to see which positions are most important. And in turn, I don't know who the hell I'm going to draft. So I'm just going to select the guy that I feel is the best pick at that time. That's probably more accurate. I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but in both the real NFL draft and a fantasy football draft, best player available cannot be real. Either it is a thing, and when practicing it, you or an NFL team, you're actually doing positional analysis, and you don't even know it. In the NFL draft, they're looking for a need. Like I said, it could be a need that is very, very glaring, or just a need as in this position is important at the NFL level. Or in fantasy football, they're looking at something like value over replacement player. They're just not admitting to it. Or best player available is a thing and people are just throwing darts. They're just completely picking at random with no regard to anything. And if that's the case, if these teams or people are just saying, yep, he feels like the one, then why are people selling best player available as something that's intelligent or important or a thing? Maybe I'm just wasting my time and yours by talking about some simple phrasing. That could easily be the case. But if that's the case, then let's change the phrase. Instead of best player available, maybe it should be something like best player available at a position of need or best player available at an important position. Because without those additions, best player available is absolutely 100% meaningless. That's it, guys. The rant's over. I'm done. I had to get that off my chest. I've been wanting to talk about best player available for a really long time. And despite it only being like a 10-15 minute podcast, I thought it was a really important time to do that because Thursday is the start of the NFL draft. You're going to hear guys on television say, you know what? I think this team, they could just go best player available. They could just use this high leverage pick and pick whoever the hell they want. Just go with the top guy on the board. And just know when they say that, to get the top guy on the board, you inherently need to know positional value. You need to do some sort of positional analysis to know who that top player is. Otherwise, we're just drafting kickers in the first round. As always, you can subscribe, and you should subscribe to this podcast on iTunes by searching Number Fire NFL Podcast, and it's available on Stitcher, SoundCloud, and now Google Play as well. You won't want to miss a show this week either, because I'm going to have Sigmund Bloom on Thursday. It's going to come out before the draft in the morning, Thursday morning, hopefully, and we'll talk about round one, and then I'll follow it up with a typical Friday mailbag that I'm assuming is going to skew draft a bit. Hopefully, you guys ask some draft-related questions. Because round one's going to be fun. Thursday's going to be a lot of fun. There's some really interesting prospects from a fantasy standpoint that could be drafted. Guys slipping down boards as well, like a Corey Davis. So I'm excited to see how all of that kind of plays out. And hopefully we can talk about it on Friday. So go subscribe and never miss a show again. Thanks for listening, guys.